Okay, just want to ask one of these questions. You don't have to limit your questions to what we study tonight. You're welcome to ask questions in any areas of biblical studies, prophetic studies, or Jewish studies. But if you ask me a question I'll be dealing with either Saturday or Sunday, I will ask you to wait till then to get the answer. But outside of those limitations, there are no others. So I have no written questions passed forward. So you can ask any question you would like. We'll take questions, let's say, till 9 o'clock. Is that all right? And then, unless the questions stop earlier, we'll stop earlier, but we won't go beyond 9 o'clock tonight. And then we'll have these sessions again, both Saturday and Sunday night. All right, who's got the mic? Go ahead. Okay, oh, I see. Give a question, raise your hand from here. First question. All right, let's go to the second question. We can come back to the first one. Who's got the second question?
He wants to know what Ariel means.
Lion of God.
Lion.
Lion. Lion. Yeah. Lion of God. Ariel. Question? Whoa. Wait for the mic.
Did you say the name Kohan, the Jewish name Kohan, is
the descendant of Aaron? The word Kohan is the Hebrew word for priest.
But didn't you connect it with Aaron, though, earlier?
Yeah. Well, only descendants of Aaron could be priests. So those who are Levites outside of the Aaronic line are called, have the name Levi. But those who are part of the Aaronic line are called Kohens. So a Jewish person named Cohen, he's the direct descendant of Aaron, and could qualify to be a priest if he was Orthodox.
The all-millennious view and covenant theology, they seem to leave out the tribulation, they seem to leave out the millennium, they seem to think the Jews have no part in it. Where do they get their scriptural ground to leave out all this?
Well, they leave it out by allegorizing those prophecies that teach it. So if you read Revelation 19:20, chapter 19, the second coming, chapter 20, have a second coming, he rules for 1,000 years. But they will simply say, well, Revelation is not chronological, and 1,000 years of chapter 20 come before the second coming in chapter 19, and it's a symbolic number between the first and second coming. So what they do is they allegorize these prophecies away. And therefore, Israel has no special role because the church is the true Israel. And we'll often say, when it says Israel, it really means the church. But then they're very selective as to when the church is Israel. When God says nice things about Israel, it's the church. When God says bad things about Israel, it's them Jews again. And so if you look at the Covenant Theology Bible, with the study help, so we'll say, like in the same chapter in Isaiah, the first part is God cursing Israel, second part, God blessing Israel. The caption reads, God curses the Jews, God blesses the church. That's that. And with an allegorical method, you can make the text mean what you want it to mean.
In all of your years of teaching prophetically, what have you changed, what have you modified from the 1980s to the present time? Is there anything that has evolved in your thinking? And the second question is, you did not mention it because it wasn't your point, but would you now say when you believe God and may God will attack?
As far as your first question, if you notice the first of the Messiah that was first published in the 70s, and then as a new edition that was published in the late 90s, there's over a 20-year break between the two publications. My view has not changed at all. If you follow literal interpretation, you don't engage in current events and so on, you have to change certain titles. Ezekiel 38:39 is no longer the Soviet Union, that's gone, but the territory doesn't change. It still includes what's now called Russia. So I've made no major changes in my prophetic views over the years. People who use current events and use what I call newspaper exegesis, they have to keep changing their views every 4 or 5 years. But if you just stay with the Word and stop with the Bible stops, you don't have to change it very often. And then my view is Ezekiel 38:39 will occur sometime before the tribulation starts, minimally 3.5 years before the tribulation starts or more, because because the 7 years of burning the weaponry must finish by the midpoint of the tribulation. So the best place to put that is minimally 3.5 years or more before the tribulation starts. Not necessarily before the rapture, but before the tribulation. The rapture we'll discuss tomorrow. Question? Any other questions? Any last? There you go.
You may not want to answer this, but are you going to discuss the origin of the Antichrist?
The origin? I won't be discussing that in the subsequent studies, so I can discuss it here. What we know from Daniel's prophecies in chapter 2 and chapter 7 is that the Antichrist is the final world ruler of the four Gentile empire, which tells immediately that he'll be of Gentile origin. But then Daniel 9, verse 26 gets more specific. He's of the same ethnic group as the people who end up destroying the city and the temple. In the year 70, it was the Romans who did so, which means the Antichrist will be a Gentile of Roman origin specifically. That doesn't mean what country he's coming from, only his bloodline will come from that old Roman nationality. Question?
You mentioned the beginning of replacement theology. Would you elaborate a little bit on the basis for that? What fueled that thinking?
I think what fueled the church fathers in the 3rd, 4th, 5th centuries to make that massive shift, because you can read all of the early church records in the 2nd, 3rd century. They're always premillennial. But as you read what the church fathers' view of the Jewish people, it was anti-Semitism that fueled replacement theology. Not that all replacement theologians say are anti-Semitic. Many of them are not. But what initiated is their views on the Jewish people. If you read, say, Chrysostom, his 8 homilies against the Jews, that became the dominant view of the church. So because of the negative view of the Jewish people, they couldn't conceive God bringing the Jews back in the land of Israel and restoration. And that's where the shift occurred. So I'd say it was sparked and fueled by anti-Semitism. Question?
On the replacement theology, one of the things that's kind of bothered me is the reformers. They seem to all have that same viewpoint. Is that correct?
The reform, for the most part, have the same viewpoint because they focus primarily on the issue of soteriology, what constitutes salvation, and so on. So they maintained many other Catholic teachings, for example, infant baptism, baptismal regeneration, the Lord's Supper, and so on. They retained many of the Catholic traditions. They maintained the Catholic eschatology, which was Amil. And so they didn't break away from that the way they should have. They focused too much on soteriology, Christology, not eschatology. And so they maintained the Catholic view about amillennialism, and that's part of the problem. Over here? Just throw it.
What do you think about Israel attacking Syria today?
You mean at the present time?
Mm-hmm.
Biblically, there's no biblical passage that says that there will be a war between Israel and Syria. Although the attack that just now happened, that was just not a flare-up that happens periodically. It's not the first time the planes went over Syria. It won't be the last time. But they were apparently knocking out an Iranian supply line to the Hezbollah in Lebanon, and Israel, for that reason, bombed it. There's also a possible report just on the CNN that there was part of North Korea's supply of nuclear material for Syria. And that's why it was kept so hush-hush. But that's just an event. There's not a specific prophecy being fulfilled just yet. Question? Back there? Over here? The lady in the back there? I would say in the 60s and 70s was here in North America, but now it's mostly in the former Soviet Union, in Russia, in Belarus, Lithuania, Moldova. There are just many Jewish people coming to faith, and our branch in St. Petersburg, Russia has, I'd say, about 200 members now, most of whom are Jewish Russian Jews. So that's the major area that the Spirit is working in the present time. The move to New York? You mean when communism fell? That's what sparked the teachings. Now, a great number of the Jews who come to faith have moved to the United States. Some have moved to Israel. Many have even come to back to Germany. And there are now, I'd say, four Messianic congregations in Germany, which is Russian-speaking, because these are Jews who came back. Berlin, Munich, Stuttgart, and Dusseldorf, four places I know of, which have Russian Messianic Jewish congregation, which are Russian-speaking. So the men have moved that to Germany today because the German Jewish community is growing again.
The lady next to me would like to have you define amillennialism. She is having laryngitis.
Okay. Wish my mother-in-law had that, but... The term amillennialism means no millennium. By that, they mean no literal millennium. They believe in a spiritual millennium between the first and second coming, and the church is not the millennium, more or less. But they don't. But what they don't believe is that Christ will come back and rule on this earth for 1,000 years. So they are amillennial, meaning no millennium on earth per se, no literal millennium. A premillennialist says Christ will come back and establish the kingdom. You have post-mills who say the church will conquer the world with the gospel, and after ruling a long time, then Christ will come back at the post-millennial. But the amillennial, which is the dominant view among replacement theologians, is there's no literal millennium. The second coming is the end of the world.
The woman next to me has nothing to do with this question. I recently have done some reading that would imply that Daniel's prophecies may be coming to pass in another arena, and that is with the onset of some research that's being done with regards to oil offshore of Israel and in the mountains, and that could result in a very wealthy situation for the government and the country of Israel. What is your feeling on that? Have you heard anything that would confirm or reflect differently? I think the oil company is called Zion Oil, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, there have been several attempts now to find oil in Israel, often attempts by fairly wealthy Christian businessmen or oil men and so on. And often they base it on a passage that says, Asher will dip his foot in oil. And they have been searching in the area where Asher, the tribe of Asher, settled. The trouble is they still need to talk to people who know a little bit of Hebrew, because the word for oil there refers to olive oil, not motor oil. And and where Asher is that then, even today, it's largely oil trees to this, olive trees to this day. So the Bible itself does not speak of them finding motor oil. Doesn't mean they won't find it, but so far all attempts to find it, past and present, have not been successful. And so whether that will make Israel a rich country or not, only time will tell. There's no biblical basis to say that. If it happens, it happens beyond what the Bible teaches. But the Bible does not speak of this. Question?
In the 17th chapter of Revelation, it speaks of Babylon.
Yes.
Is that a new city that's going to be built and maybe in the same vicinity of the biblical Babylon?
Well, chapter 18 of Revelation speaks of the city of Babylon, which I take quite literally, whereas chapter 17 is speaking of Babylon as a religious system. So chapter 17 is Babylon as a religious entity, which will be headquartered in Babylon, the city. And I see no reason not to take it quite literally. So Babylon is scheduled to be rebuilt, become the world cap in the Antichrist, and be destroyed as part of the Armageddon War. And incidentally, Saddam Hussein, before he was deposed and hanged, he largely rebuilt the city of Babylon because he saw himself as Nebuchadnezzar II. The first Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Israel, he'll be Nebuchadnezzar II that will destroy Israel. So he began building the city for that purpose. So although he never qualified to be the Antichrist for two reasons. First of all, he never was smart enough to be the Antichrist. And secondly, the Antichrist is going to be a Gentile of Roman origin. He was of Semitic origin. But the city he's been rebuilding is destined to become the headquarters of the Antichrist in the future. Question? Any other questions? Well, if it crumples down, I'm not going to cry over it. But as far as biblical and Jewish law is concerned, the temple must be built on the Temple Mount, but not necessarily in the same place it was before, which means two things could happen. Number one, those Muslim structures could collapse or be destroyed or for some reason removed. But if you've been up there, you'll notice, well, the southern side, there's a lot of Muslim structures. The whole north side is totally empty. Another possible option is just to cut the Temple Mount in two, leaving the south end for the Muslims and build the temple, Jewish temple, on the north side. What we know for sure is that the temple will be rebuilt because the Bible teaches exactly how God's going to accomplish it remains to be seen. But we should not assume that the Muslim mosques have to go down. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. The space up there to build a very large temple with lots of space and extra beyond that, totally apart from bringing the Muslim mosque down. So time will tell how God will do it. Question? Any other questions? Any last questions? Well, this is hard for a lot of Americans to accept, but God did not consider the USA important enough to mention anywhere in Scripture. So the U.S. plays no mention role in Bible prophecy. Whether the U.S. will continue to exist or not, we don't know, because ultimately there'll be only 10 Gentile nations, and the U.S. might be amalgamated into a country called North America. I might just add, while Bush has lost a lot of popularity here, because of the liberal press, he's still very popular in Israel, and in Israel they're quite happy what he did in Iraq and so on. But when he was first elected, that was not the case. When Bush was first elected, there was a lot of fear and trepidation in Israel. Because last time the Jews listened to someone named Bush, they got lost in the desert for 40 years. Thanks for opening the door. Question?
Yes, in reference to this question, while the U.S. is not mentioned in Scripture, there's no geographic designation for our area either.
Right.
I've oftentimes looked at, in my own study, that's a great concern in terms of, Lord, what are you going to do with this country of over 45 million abortions?
Yeah, exactly. And this country, I think, has also been blessed because of its consistent support for Israel, but that's largely due to the evangelical community. When the rapture comes, there's no good reason to keep supporting Israel either. So things could change radically in this country after the rapture. Question? Any other questions? Any last questions? All right, I'll close with one more rabbi story. I'll give you some more tomorrow. This one I picked up in Germany. There was a town with one synagogue and one Catholic church, so only one priest and one rabbi. One of the priests decided he would like to do something nice for the rabbi without telling him as a goodwill gesture. He noticed the rabbi's car was rather dirty, so he decided he washed the rabbi's car for him. He's doing that, and the rabbi looked out of his second-story apartment, and he saw this black robe priest splashing all this water all over his car. A day passes, and the priest looked out his window, and what did he see? He saw the rabbi approaching the car the priest would drive. In the rabbi's hand was a saw, and he saw several inches off the tailpipe of the priest's car. Priest came out running, "Rabbi, Rabbi, what are you doing to my car?" Rabbi said, "Yesterday I saw you baptizing my car. Now I am circumcising your car." More Rabbi stories tomorrow.